This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I am your host, Tim Murray. Looking forward to today's episode as Colin Wilson from the Action Network, live from SEC Media Days, will join us to break down the Mid-American Conference. I'm just kidding. He's going to break down the SEC, and we'll get into some of his favorite bets, as well as his season preview, which is out now, courtesy of the Action Network. So looking forward to chopping it up with Colin Wilson. Always love talking ball with him, and we're going to sit down and chat for quite a while looking at the SEC. We're going to close the podcast discussing the breaking news from earlier this week that Fresno State head coach Jeff Tedford has resigned. He has dealt with health issues in the past. He did not coach the bowl game for Fresno State this past year, the New Mexico Bowl, in which Fresno State won comfortably. But we'll get into the ramifications of Jeff Tedford resigning as the head coach of Fresno State. Were there any movements in the futures market? And I'm also going to play a couple clips from Jeff Tedford's interview from VSiN Primetime, not this most recent year, but last year, thinking back to the years at Cal. I mean, it's pretty impressive when you think back to the career that Jeff Tedford had, and unfortunate that he had to end it in the fashion that he did. And I think it came as a pretty big shock to people when he was in town for Mountain West Media Days and ultimately decided to resign due to health concerns. And now stepping in will be Tim Skipper on an interim basis there for Fresno State. So we'll do that after Colin Wilson jumps on the podcast. I wanted to start the podcast today with this. So this week, Jonathan Von Tobel and I are filling in for Mitch and Paul on Follow the Money instead of our normal spot, VSiN Primetime, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Make sure you check it out. Just saying. But they do a segment called Mitch and Paulie's Pizza Bets. Took it at long shots, long flyers, and JVT took a couple long flyers in the Heisman market. Rocco Becht at 1,000 to 1, Iowa State's quarterback, and he also took a look at Dylan Raiola, the freshman at Nebraska, at 500 to 1. So for me, kind of got it rolling. And of course, we opened the podcast a couple weeks ago looking at the history of the Heisman Trophy and when should you bet into the Heisman Trophy market. And essentially, the conclusion I came to was, yeah, you probably don't need a bet until in season because you might be able to get a better number. Jaden Daniels last year, he could have got 40 to 1 after they lost to Florida State and a pretty good price throughout the season. Caleb Williams, you could have got a good number throughout the season. Bryce Young, you could have got a decent number later on in the season. The list goes on and on. But then I also thought about Joe Burrow, 200 to 1 once upon a time, entering 2019, wins the Heisman Trophy. Lamar Jackson, 100 to 1 back in 2016. Cam Newton was 20 to 1 week 3. So who would be someone worth a pizza bet in the Heisman market? And I ultimately landed on two quarterbacks. Remember, since 2000, 22 Heisman Trophy winners, 18 of them quarterbacks. We have seen the Heisman Trophy winner not start in the top 25. RG3, 2011, they were unranked, Baylor entering that year. Johnny Manziel, Texas A&M, unranked, entering 2012. Cam Newton, they were ranked number 22, entering 2010. And I'm going to start with Cam Newton. His offensive coordinator at Auburn in 2010, who was it? Gus Malzahn. Gus Malzahn, head coach of Central Florida, he at Big 12 Media Day here in Las Vegas said this about his quarterback, KJ Jefferson. Quote, physically, he's the closest thing to Cam that I've had. He's like a running back. He throws a great deep ball. We're a run play action team with emphasis on throwing the ball downfield, end quote. Currently, KJ Jefferson is available at the Westgate Superbook at 150-1. Can UCF win the Big 12? It's unlikely, but is it out of this world to think that in what is believed to be a completely wide open conference, that UCF could win that conference? I don't think it's outrageous. Let's look at the odds for them to win the Big 12. Entering this year, UCF, 10-1. Fifth shortest odds, right there with Iowa State and Arizona. KJ Jefferson is a sixth-year senior. He's a guy that's played a ton of football. He's rushed for over 2,000 yards in his career. In the Pick 6 previews, which is out now at picksixpreviews.com, we'll get to that in a little bit more time here, KJ Jefferson had the fourth best QB rating in the SEC in 2022 and had the second best QB rating in that conference in 2021. And now he's got a backfield of just bulldozers. RJ Harvey and Penny Boone from Toledo. Both running backs rushed for over 1,400 yards a year ago. Kobe Hudson, wide receiver, back over 900 yards receiving. This is a UCF team that does not have to play Kansas State, who is in some spots the co-favorite to win the Big 12. Does not have to play Kansas. They get Utah to come to the bounce house this year, last game of the regular season. For a dual threat quarterback like KJ Jefferson at 150-1 playing in this Gus Malzahn system. Oh, by the way, Gus Malzahn will be calling the plays. 150-1 as a little pizza bet. They also don't have to play Oklahoma State. So UCF, when you look at their schedule, no Kansas State plus 380 to win the conference. No Oklahoma State plus 750 to win the conference. No Kansas. 9-1 to win the conference. The favorite in the conference is Utah. They get to play them in the bounce house. Now, they do have to go to Ames October 19th. They host Arizona. They don't play Texas Tech. This schedule sets up very nicely for a potential run for UCF to maybe make the conference championship game. If you're wondering what those odds are for UCF to participate in the Big 12 championship, it's plus 450. I actually think that's a decent bet to make considering what the schedule looks like. KJ Jefferson, 150-1. He's 90-1 at Circa, 100-1 at DraftKings, 150-1 right now at the Westgate Superbook. I've made dumber bets in my life. Should we do another 151? All right, let's do it. How about a team that brings back the most offensive production in the country? Who's that? The Virginia Tech Hokies. Yeah, Ryan Kramer, if you're listening, Sports Gambling Podcast, I'm talking about your boys, your beloved Hokies, and your quarterback, Kyren Drones. 150-1 for Mr. Drones to win the Heisman Trophy. Also at the Westgate Superbook, he's 75-1 at Circa, 110-1. At DraftKings. From a schedule standpoint, Virginia Tech doesn't play SMU, doesn't play Florida State, doesn't play Louisville, doesn't play NC State. They get an opportunity to go down to Miami on a Friday night in late September to take on the Hurricanes. It's going to be a fun game, old school Big East rivalry. Kyren Drones, a guy that a year ago needs to improve on the passing, there's no doubt. But he is a dynamic runner who netted over 800 yards of offense on the ground, rushing yards on the ground. His bowl game was spectacular when you think back to his performance against, albeit, a Tulane team that didn't really want to be there with Willie Fritz out the door. But 176 yards on the ground last year against Tulane in their bowl game. They got rolling because Kyren Drones, stepped in. So 150-1 on a quarterback with a ton of offensive firepower returning from a year ago, 91% of offensive production returning. They get to host Clemson. I'm sure that will be a primetime game. Get your inner Sandman going, even though it's a little overrated there of their home field advantage. But it's still a cool scene in Blacksburg, especially for a night game. Schedule's manageable, man. Virginia Tech with all of the production returning. I know they're one of those kind of chic teams because people look at the production, look at the schedule and say, hey, this team could make a run. Could they make the playoff? Could they make the ACC championship game? 150-1 for Kyren Drones at Westgate Superbook for him to win the Heisman Trophy. Those will be my two pizza bets in addition to Nico Imeleava. Did I get it right? I don't know. We're just going to call him Nico at 18-1, which I know I contradicted myself, but I do think when you look at the history, taking those long shots in the preseason, sometimes they're fruitful. Kyren Drones, KJ Jefferson, both 150-1 at the Westgate. Those are my two pizza bets for the college football season, taking a look at that Heisman market. All right, when we come back from our break, we will welcome in Colin Wilson. But before we hit that break, I do want to remind you of the Pick Six Previews. They are a sponsor of this podcast. We, the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast, and Pick Six Previews have come together in a little collaboration. Head over to picksixpreviews.com to order it. It is available now. I have been a big fan of this preview. I know Chris Felica, the Bear, is as well. He has done an endorsement there for Brett Cianca. It is the number one most accurate football preview magazine the last 10 years. Brett sticks to the Power Four teams. He has previewed in depth all 70 Power Four teams. Brett is a Heisman voter, All-American Selection Committee. He is a one-man band. He does it all himself. So you could get a hard copy of the magazine, or you could just get the digital copy, or you could do what I did and get both. PickSixPreviews.com. Brett will be a guest of the podcast next week. Looking forward to that. But fired up for our partnership with PickSixPreviews.com and the Pick Six Previews magazine that is out now. So make sure you check it out, PickSixPreviews.com. All right, quick break. When we come back, Colin Wilson breaking down the SEC. And as promised, Colin Wilson, Action Network, Big Bets on Campus podcast. He joins us right now live from SEC Media Days down in Texas. His SEC preview expected to already be out, depending on when you listen to this podcast. It's coming out on Thursday, so make sure to check that out at @Colin1 on social media. Colin, it was great to catch up with you last week in Las Vegas, Big 12 Media Days and Mountain West Media Days. Before we jump into the SEC, I had two things I wanted to throw your way real quickly because you had a strong take on Iowa State, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on UCF. So let's start with the Cyclones. This is a team with win total 7.5, and you're pretty bullish on Iowa State. So in the futures market, win total market, Colin, what do your numbers say, and how have you been looking to bet the Cyclones this year?
Yeah, I love Iowa State any way you can cut it, really. I mean, it comes down to the fact that they're heavily experienced. Matt Campbell can be a problem from a defensive perspective and from an offensive perspective, a 3-3-5 stack on defense. And then on offensively, he loves to have a minimum of two tight ends out there, sometimes three. And that can be hard for any new coach that may be seeing this for the first time. But once you get past that, Iowa State is doing something they've never done before. They have an explosive offense. And I, you know, Matt Campbell's quote from Big 12 Media Days was, you know, once you put on the tape, Rocco Becht looks like Brock Purdy, their junior year of high school. Like, they look exactly the same. So if that's the kind of progression that we're going to get out of Rocco Becht, that's a pretty good path to be on. And I really do like them. There's, you know, the schedule isn't exactly easy. I know I am higher than them. I know everybody else is around 7.9. I make them a 9-win team. Just simply stated on the fact, like, they have weapons that I don't think anybody's going to be able to know what to do with. Besides their wide receivers that are both 2.6 yards per route run, they've got a tight end and Benjamin Brommer. He's 6'7". The guy is like an automatic first down every time he catches the ball. there are more weapons on this team and an element of explosiveness I've never seen before with Iowa State. Although I think the Big 12 is wide open, this is definitely on my short list of three teams that are not being talked about that can win this conference.
So I opened the podcast, Colin, talking about long shots to win the Heisman Trophy. And I did this whole breakdown about a month ago on this podcast saying, you know, you really shouldn't bet into these Heisman markets in the preseason unless you find a long shot. And these two particular quarterbacks are long shots, pizza bets, however you want to define it. One's Kyren Drones from Virginia Tech. We don't have to talk about him. The other's KJ Jefferson of UCF. Both are 150-1 at Westgate here in town. You know KJ Jefferson as well as anybody, being an Arkansas guy. He links up with Gus Malzahn. And I know that the quote coming out of Big 12 Media Day that caught your attention was Gus Malzahn, I don't want to say he was comparing him to Cam Newton, but essentially said, I haven't had a quarterback since Cam Newton that runs like KJ Jefferson. So what do you make of KJ Jefferson this year? What do you think of the fit with him down there in Orlando? And what do you think of the Knights?
Well, I mean, I believe Gus's quote was, I've never had anybody as close to Newton run this offense as much as, you know, KJ is going to fill that. I think for a lot of people, they want to know what's happened to KJ the last 2 years at Arkansas, and it's really been a very bad situation. And Malzahn hinted to this at the Big 12 Media Days, where he was talking about how KJ would just lost a lot of pieces on offense, and Arkansas kind of lost their way, and that at a high level is kind of what happened. But really what happened is Pittman hires Dan Enos to be an offensive coordinator. He prefers slow-developing plays, read your progressions. I want to check my third and fourth receiver. That's not KJ Jefferson football. KJ Jefferson is 260 pounds of man that likes to hit a hot read or run zone read option on the ground. And that worked back when he had the pieces in 2021. He had Treylon Burks, who's now in the NFL. He had him to run play action pass. He hasn't had any of that in the last 2 years at Arkansas. That doesn't really dismiss, like, he's not worse than he used to be. He just never had the pieces and the support around him. Now he's running an offense that was tailor-made for his skill set. He's got two backs running backs in the backfield. I mean, Penny Boone is already the best, you know, runner in the MAC. Harvey may be the best runner in the Big 12. And then outside of that, he's got some serious weapons on the outside, which whoever his hot read is going to put up big numbers. I'm not going to dismiss anybody that says KJ can win the Heisman, because I think UCF can win the Big 12. And if you got a playoff spot in the semifinals, your quarterback is under consideration for a Heisman.
Yeah. And I mean, I was looking for long shots, and it's funny to look at the differences of prices at different spots, you know, and once I saw 150-1, I'm like, yeah, you know what? I've made dumber bets in my life. So let's roll with that. What probably isn't a dumb bet is to say that Georgia's going to win the national title. They're a little north of 3-1, DraftKings plus 320, Colin. Let's break down these Bulldogs. They open up the season, neutral site game, neutral site, I put up air quotes because it's in Atlanta against Clemson, where they're around a 2-touchdown favorite. They do have to go on the road to Tuscaloosa, granted, off a bye, have to go on the road to Texas, and that will be a fascinating game, and they have to go on the road to Ole Miss. They host Tennessee. This team seems as loaded as it comes, you know, when it comes to college football. I know you've got some futures in your pocket. Have you gained anything from SEC Media Days about this Georgia team that is going to make you even more bullish, less bullish? What's your expectation of the Dogs heading into this season?
I feel justified in my opinion that the national title is the wager to make and not the SEC and not the win total. Kirby was very adamant up at the podium about how this is a 17-game season. This is an NFL schedule that's going to last till the end of January now. And Kirby was very, you know, pointy. He pointed out you're going to have depth. You have to have two deep all over your roster to make this run to win this many number of games. When you look at Georgia's history, like, this is, I don't know, what do we call it? Playing with their food, like they're keeping it close with Kent State. Like, they just don't care about their non-conference slate. They take it pretty easy on some teams. Like, generally, when they get two or three scores up on a team in the SEC, they'll take their foot off the gas. Kirby understands how long of a season this is, the fact that they're going to have more in the tank than they've ever had before. I think that's going to limit some playing time of guys like Carson Beck. I'm not sure how many second halves he's going to see in the first few games. I think it gives him time to give the maybe the softest part of his defense, which is the secondary, gives them time to get more experience. But they fall into such a great scheduling, you know, whole situation against Texas coming in after Red River. If you look up Red River, what Texas is, they struggle with Iowa State, lost to Oklahoma State. Like, they are not good the week after. So Georgia is in such a great position. But this is not a team I would be looking to bet on the side the first six games of the season, because Kirby is going to take it in third gear and keep it there until December.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to look at it. Georgia right now, around 13 and a half point week favorite against Clemson in week one, than an FCS opponent before going on the road to Kentucky. You mentioned Texas. They are the team, based off of the odds, second best chance to win the SEC, around third shot to win the title. Steve Sarkisian, I know when he went to the podium, said, I think I'm paraphrasing here, this is the deepest team he's ever had at Texas. They've got a non-con game against Michigan. They play Georgia, as we talked about, the weekend of F1, which is just going to be bonkers down there in Austin. They play your Hogs on the road. Texas is a team that's getting a lot of hype. They bring back Quinn Ewers. They bring back a lot of pieces from a year ago, a team that went to the college football playoff. They also went to the portal, brought in Silas Bolden from Oregon State, who I think will be a fun player to watch there for Texas. So, you know, it feels like coming into this year, Colin, it's Georgia, Ohio State, maybe a little bit of a gap, Texas, Oregon, then maybe a little bit of a bigger gap. Are you as high on Texas as the rest of the market seems to be?
I'm not. And crazy, because mathematically, I make them with the same amount of conference wins as Georgia. So if you're just looking in a spreadsheet, you would think that this team is just as good as anybody in the conference. And I get that. But there are certain things that make me think there is some aggression, dude, besides the fact that they won like every single coin flip game that they had on their schedule. If you go a little bit deeper into that, I just got done talking to Steve Sarkisian down in a side breakout room. And I mentioned to him that they were fourth in red zone touchdown percentage in 2021, his initial year in Austin. Last year, they fell to 120th in red zone TD percentage. And I asked him, is that luck? Is that play calling? Is it the fact that you lost Bijan Robinson and 20 all-purpose, you know, TDs a year ago, and that's where you struggled? His response to that was the fact that it was a cheat code to have Bijan Robinson and Roschon Johnson playing wildcat at the goal line during the 2022 season, and he lost that. And he said, I've got about 25, as to where those two were my leaders 2 years ago, I've got about 25 guys that are all potentially going to be a leader this year. And I said, by leader, does that mean that you have two guys picked out to run the wildcat at the goal line? The answer was no. So these huge issues that Texas has in the red zone with finishing drives, I think they finished 70th in finishing drives. They only average like 3.2 points per trip past the 40. There's no answer for that. It's not resolved. And his wildcat package that he featured two beefy backs and, you know, an all-time talent with Bijan Robinson, he doesn't have that anymore. So I think those coin flips are going to go the other way. And like I said before, with that scheduling of Georgia right after Red River, I mean, those games that are the toughest for Texas, they seem to all line up against each other. I actually took an alternate team total under 9.5 at plus 180 in the market.
Wow.
I'm just writing off the Georgia game. I think Oklahoma is going to keep it within a possession. I think they're going to have a game where Steve Sarkisian just can't get it figured out from an offensive scoring perspective when they get into the red zone. So I'm going to take the under 9.5 on an alternate line. I'll look for ways to hedge it, but I don't think I'll have to.
Texas right now, that number at DraftKings, plus 160. So it's moving a little bit in your favor there. It's going to be weird, man. Nick Saban is working in the media. He apparently picked Texas to play Georgia in the SEC championship. So he's fitting in well. He's making friends already at Tuscaloosa in his early days. Yeah. We saw Jalen Milrow kind of running over to the SEC set today, giving him a hug. So life without Saban, it's going to be very odd. This has been just an absolute powerhouse since 2008. And you look at the win total, it's 9.5. Now, the schedule's challenging. You've got a non-con game up in Camp Randall, their favorite, but still kind of a tricky spot. Georgia, Tennessee on the road, LSU on the road, Oklahoma on the road. You're playing Oklahoma off a bye. You get Missouri, a team that, you know, some people are high on. Kalen DeBoer, as pointed out by your colleague Brett McMurphy, is 104-12 as a head coach, which is a pretty decent winning percentage. So DeBoer walks in. Some talent went out the door, not all of the talent. I don't know what to make of this team, Colin, because there's part of me that thinks, have we gone too low on Alabama? Like, there's still going to be the cupboard's still relatively full there. I would like it a lot more if Ryan Grubb was their offensive coordinator. What have you grabbed from SEC Media Days, and what do you expect from the Crimson Tide in year one post Saban?
Yeah, DeBoer only spent, I think, 2 years, I believe, at Fresno, where he did not have Ryan Grubb on staff. And you kind of go back to that, and he was able to make do with a backup quarterback and Logan Fife for a few games. And he's done it before, even when he was at Indiana. I think he had Tuttle for a while, getting him to produce. So everywhere Kalen DeBoer goes, he's able to create instant offense. And I think the big question for me coming into this media day was to ask Kalen flat out, is what Jalen Milroe ran before in this offense, is that applicable from a routes, X's and O's, and scheme offensive perspective so that he can still have the most beautiful ball downfield? For those that don't know, Milroe had 26 big-time throws over 20 yards last year. Zero mistakes. It's shocking how good he is, because the guy cannot throw from 9 to 19 yards. I mean, it's just an interception waiting to happen. You get him over 20 yards, it's always a touchdown. It's one of the craziest anomalies I've ever seen. But, talking to Kalen DeBoer about his offensive system and his plan, they're going to get Milroe in space, and they're going to let him sling it as far as he wants. He's got good enough weapons there from a yards per route run perspective. The defense loves Malachi Moore, who can come down and play slot corner. He can play safety. They lost some pieces on the edge, but they're going to be fine on the defensive line too. I favor them in 9 games this season. It is a little bit tricky. I wanted to stay away from the win total. I project their win total at 9.9, but half of the SEC schedule is going to come off a bye week to face Alabama. Georgia's off a bye, Vanderbilt, LSU, Oklahoma. That's going to catch up to any team. I don't care who you are. That catches up to a team when half the teams you're facing in league are fresh. So I'm not touching the win total. They are a great candidate to make it to the SEC championship. And if they do, let's just put the math together here. Alabama can throw it deep with Jalen Milroe, and Georgia's biggest weakness is the secondary. I'll take an Alabama 8-1 to win it, and we'll see how it plays out.
So, Colin, if you look at the DraftKings market to make or miss the playoffs, the yes-no, they've taken down Ohio State and Georgia, but they are massive favorites to make the playoff, as is Oregon, Texas, Notre Dame, and Ole Miss. Ole Miss is a favorite to make the playoff this year. Lane Kiffin went hard to the portal, number one according to 247 Sports. I was reading through the pick six preview, and he has, Brett Cianca has 6 of the 22 players on his all transfer team on Ole Miss. So look, we know they went hard in the portal. You look at, they got to play LSU, they get Georgia at home, they get Oklahoma. They're at Florida right now in game of the year lines. They are an underdog in 2 games. They don't have to play Alabama. It really feels like this is an all-in type of year for Lane Kiffin. For the most part, at least from what I gathered, Colin, I don't know if you got a little side session, but it seemed like Lane was pretty tempered, didn't make any big waves. I don't know if that is, because he's, dealing with a little tragedy. His father, the great Monty Kiffin, just passed away, and he talked about him at the mic. But this team's got a lot of pieces, man. But I think I might steal your thunder a little bit, because I heard you mention this on your podcast. We've yet to see the portal team win a title, right? You think about the USC team. You think about some of the other teams out there that have gone heavy in the portal. What do you make of this Ole Miss team favored right now to make the playoff at minus 130?
I keep going back to, all things being even, this coaching staff just got waxed by Georgia by 35 points. Yeah. And you can bring in an all-star at every single position, which they do. I can't argue and sit here and say they don't have talent at the critical positions. They do. There's not a single player on this entire roster, except maybe my old Arkansas Razorback, Chris Pooh Paul, playing middle linebacker. He had moments of ineptness for the Razorbacks. But, by and large, both sides of the ball are completely loaded. To reiterate what I said on our Action Network podcast, or on our Big Bets on Campus podcast, just because you win the portal doesn't mean you're a championship team. USC won the portal with Caleb Williams a couple years ago, didn't win the Pac-12 championship. LSU was in the same position, didn't win the SEC championship. Now, what this does is it builds your depth, which Ole Miss has done. It increases your level of talent and your starters. But then I go back, like, are you really going to make a 35-point jump between yourself and Georgia just off of one portal class? I don't think that that's possible whatsoever. Now, on the flip side, from a mathematical perspective, I have them comfortable favorites in 10 games. So I can't blindly – Ole Miss does not have the pedigree as a program, as a playoff team. So I'm not saying that you should go out and take the no, but at the same time, they've never done it before, and I'm not sure they have the continuity. I mean, college football is still a team sport, and you have to have continuity to make it that far. I know in the SEC preview coming out, instead, I veered off of win total. I veered off the playoff, and I said, you've got to hit a game of the year, Ole Miss -6.5 against Florida. Where this game falls on the schedule, by the way, the game should be like 10 or 11. It shouldn't be 6.5. And I think Florida is extremely talented. This is the most vulnerable part of the Florida schedule that they have, considering the massive amount of top 10 teams they play in their final five games. Ole Miss gets to come off a bye, go to Gainesville on November 23rd, right before Thanksgiving weekend, completely refreshed, while the Gators are in game 11, right off consecutive games against Georgia, Texas, LSU, and then they're going to play Ole Miss. Give me Ole Miss -6.5 in the game of your market. That's the pick I love on them.
That is, you know, I'm a big fan of situational spots, and that might be the hardest stretch in college football history. Yes. And I don't think it's being hyperbolic. Like, your arch rival, Georgia, best team in the country. You're at Texas, arguably a top three team in the country, home to LSU, and then you're playing Ole Miss off a bye. Oh, by the way, the week before you play your arch rival in Florida State. So, yeah, really interesting angle to look at Ole Miss from that standpoint. LSU, Brian Kelly said this is the deepest team that he's had at LSU. Kind of seems like that's the theme of this week. But, you know, Colin, it's hard to overlook the fact that you lose the Heisman Trophy winner. You lose two first-round picks in Brian Thomas and Malik Nabers, and you lose your leading rusher in Logan Diggs. But can the defense possibly be worse? They went out and spent a ton of money to bring back Blake Baker. The irony is that he let him go, and he became a stud at Missouri. But regardless, another thing that Brett McMurphy, shouts to Brett, another really good nugget that he pointed out. Brian Kelly, year three in the FBS, I'm not including his stint at Grand Valley State, won the conference at Central Michigan, 12-0 at Cincinnati, 12-0 at Notre Dame. Third year has been the year for Brian Kelly. They open up 6-point favorites in Las Vegas against USC. They have a home game against Ole Miss off a bye. They go to Texas A&M, host Alabama. There's no Georgia. There's no Texas. They get Oklahoma at home. Win totals at 9 for the Bayou Bengals. You lose a lot of production and your offensive coordinator. LSU, how are we feeling about the boys from Baton Rouge?
I don't think they're going to resolve their defensive problems. I don't think Blake Baker was the right hire. I mean, this love for Baker as a defensive coordinator is just, I believe, people looking at Missouri's end record and looking at the fact they end up in the Cotton Bowl and thinking this is a really good defense. And it actually wasn't for Missouri. They finished outside the top 100 in tackle grading and in finishing drives. Their arm tackles are not working and they're letting people score. What got Missouri so many wins last year is the fact that their offense was able to overcome that. I mean, you can go directly back to the Missouri LSU game where LSU scored what, 3 touchdowns in the last 4 minutes of that game. I don't think it was the right hire. I don't think it's going to resolve a lot of the issues that the Tigers have on the defensive end. And again, they're going to have to play an extreme amount of heavy, aggressive, quick strike offense with Nussmeier, which they can do with Kyron Lacy, Nussmeier. They also have a wide receiver, CJ Daniels, coming in from Liberty. He had 3.9 yards per route run. That's double the mark you need to be an explosive wide receiver. I see a repeat of last year. Now, from a win total perspective, I've got them projected at 9.9, but I make their conference win total at 6.2, and DraftKings has an over 5.5 at plus money, plus 120. Mm. And if you go through their schedule, they're going to be able to get away with having such a poor defense with how this starts. You're going to start off with a dual threat 3-star quarterback at South Carolina and Sellers. They're not going to have a problem stopping that. Texas A&M, October 26th date against Texas A&M. I've already spoke about how I think Colin Klein was the wrong decision at offensive coordinator there, not going to expose the backside of the LSU defense. If you go through the schedule, there is a serious problem with some of these teams and their offenses, and that's where I think LSU can eclipse their 5.5 win total from SEC win perspective.
All right, a team that it's just funny because we talked about Florida just briefly, and I feel like that's been a theme of the offseason podcast, is I just keep bringing up Florida and this that brutal schedule. And with the unbalanced nature of these mega conferences, Colin, sometimes you get lucky like Missouri, and you look at their schedule from an SEC standpoint, no Georgia, no Texas, no Ole Miss, no LSU. You do have to go to Texas A&M and Alabama, but hey, man, you're playing in the SEC. You're going to have hard games. Their non-con is an absolute embarrassment. Murray State, Buffalo, Boston College. And then for some odd reason, they're going to Amherst to play UMass on October 12th. Missouri's a team that at 10-2, I don't know if they get in just because of the strength of the schedule that they're playing. Win total sitting at 9. I had Cole Kubelik from the SEC Network on the show a couple weeks ago. And, you know, I brought up Nate Noel, the transfer from App State. He said, yeah, Nate Noel's good, but go watch Marcus Carroll's tape. Mm-hmm. This guy's an absolute machine. He went to Georgia State. He ran for over 1,300 yards. So I did, and I was like, holy smokes, that dude is an absolute monster. So they lose Cody Schrader, bring back Luther Burden, bring back Brady Cook. Missouri's one of those teams that it's another one. It feels a little Ole Missy, right? It's like a lot of hype this preseason for Missouri. Are we buying the Missouri hype? Schedule seems soft enough, but you still do have road trips to College Station and Tuscaloosa. You host Oklahoma. You know, are we believing in Eli Drinkwitz, Scott?
I'm not sure I believe so much in the coaching staff, although I do love Kirby Moore at offensive coordinator. Drink's best decision was to allow Kirby Moore to call all the plays there on offense. I do think there's going to be regression in the fact that of how great they were on offense, and now they lose Cody Schrader. And I was of the same thinking. Marcus Carroll of Georgia State and Nate Noel of App State were two of the best G5, definitely in the Sun Belt. They combined for more than 2,100 rushing yards a season ago, and they're just men amongst boys in the G5. I mean, they're properly in the SEC now. But at the same time, it's one of those things where how much luck played into that last year? How many wins did they have that they would have this year? They had some very good luck. They have a new defensive coordinator in Corey Batu, which I think is an upgrade over Baker that was there before. He runs a 3-3-5 just the same. They run a lot of cover three, and he sends blitz on 34% of snaps for South Alabama. So I think they're going to be improved on defense. They have extremely soft schedule. And I think the hesitation that I have in my voice is that Drink got up at SEC Media Days and talked about how important Cody Schrader was, not just to the team on the field, but to what he was to the intangibles and the locker room and who he was towards his quarterback, towards his offensive line, that he was a magnetic force. And now that leadership that they had was gone. So while all of this looks great on paper, and while these running backs that are coming in look great and the schedule is cake, I'm a little hesitant, so I laid off of the win total. I don't think they can win the SEC because the secondary is extremely bad. If you're going to go up against the weapons that Carson Beck has around him, you're going to go up against Alabama on that schedule, and we just talked about what Jalen Milroe does with the deep ball, then that secondary is absolutely going to get torched. So in my opinion, at their ceiling, I project them at 9.4 wins. Their ceiling is to win 7 games in conference and potentially have some sort of tiebreaker that gets them into the SEC championship game. The bet that I made on them was 5-1 at DraftKings to make the SEC championship. But you have 2 hedge spots in November that you can hit just in case that's not going to play out. They're going to be in the race because of the ease of the schedule. But you need to take that 5-1 to make the SEC championship off of DraftKings. And then you need to go look late on the schedule to go ahead and hedge that. Say against Alabama, I think, is the key game on there where you're going to have to go against them.
Yeah, it's a fascinating market, and I haven't really jumped into it too much, but the SEC for sure is really intriguing from that standpoint, the Big 12 as well. So that market does exist there at DraftKings, as Colin just mentioned, and not only to win, but just to participate in that conference championship game. All right, I don't know where you're going to stand on this, so I'm a little nervous to get your thoughts. We're getting to Tennessee, Josh Heupel. I opened up, I mentioned the Heisman breakdown I did. I did this whole thing, you know, you shouldn't bet it now. And then I completely contradicted myself when I put a bet on Nico Imaleava to win the Heisman Trophy. I was like, I can't help myself. At 18-1, he probably should be priced, if this was a couple of years ago, Colin, like 25-1. Market's not dumb anymore. They're not going to let us have someone in Josh Heupel's system at a cheap rate. So the schedule's not easy. You've got to go to Oklahoma in the Heupel, you know, return game, which is kind of one of the underrated games, in my opinion, of college football this year. Heupel returning to Oklahoma. You host Alabama third weekend of October. You got to go to Georgia. So there are a lot of challenges out there for Josh Heupel's squad. But I'm curious your perspective on it, because Hendon Hooker fit this system like a glove. Would have won the Heisman, but maybe if he doesn't tear his ACL. Joe Milton did not. Does Nico fit this system? When you look at Brew McCoy is back. They went out and got Chris Brazzle from Tulane, their leading wide receiver. Dante Thornton is back. Squirrel White is back. There's a lot of weapons there. They went to the portal and added a couple tight ends, one from Alabama and another from Notre Dame. What do you look at this offense? Are you bullish on Tennessee? Are they going to put up a ton of points? What kind of your takeaway on the Vols so far?
I think the mini sample that we saw in the bowl game against Iowa is exactly what we're going to see here this season. Tennessee's offense under Josh Heupel, this stretch and spread raid that they kind of do, they want to use the entire field, but it's a timing offense. And what I mean by that is any quarterback running the Tennessee offense should be able to take his 3 or 5 step drop, close his eyes, and the target is exactly where you would picture them to be on their route. So, you know, considering it's not an offense where the wide receiver gets to dictate his route tree after the snap, they're always going to where they need to go. Now, that works when the timing offense is not stopped at the line of scrimmage. But when you face a team like Georgia, or you face a team like Iowa that has cornerbacks that can jam you in the shoulders and keep you on the line of scrimmage, the timing is gone. And that is where Joe Milton really was exposed as to what kind of passer he is. Now, Nico was pressured in 12 of 19 dropback attempts against Iowa in the bowl game. When he didn't have pressure, he looked like he could handle the timing offense. When he did have pressure, it did not go well whatsoever. And if we all remember, Tennessee had 0 points, like, I think through the entire, the game might've been over by noon. I can't remember how early it was, but you know, Tennessee really struggled to score points there. If you look at their schedule, you're right there. It's not the easiest one in the world, but the non-conference is blowout city. Every game is going to be blowout city. They're going to get their timing down. But I worry about whenever they face, you know, some of the teams that have corners that are good enough to jam them, they fall into a good spot. Heupel's been great off a bye. He's 5-1 against the spread off of bye weeks. They get Arkansas. They get Kentucky. Those are going to be wins there for him. But the hurdle is a trio of games: Oklahoma, Alabama, and Georgia. And I won't go through their corners, but they are absolutely defenses that can stop them at the line of scrimmage. So for that matter, I think 9 is the ceiling for this team. Right now, the number out there on the to make the playoff no for Tennessee is -220. Now, I don't like giving season-long bets where you're paying juice like over -150. Sure. Tennessee is not making the playoff. Their ceiling is 9. It is not 10 whatsoever. I feel more safe in telling, you know, myself betting and letting everyone else know Tennessee -220 has a lot of value. It actually should be a lot higher.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, sometimes there are value plays out there. Brad Powers gave out Oregon, I think, -210 or something like that to make the playoff early on in the offseason. It's now -$3. You know, there can be value, certainly, in prices like that. Let's get to Oklahoma. Brent Venables, year 3. And I was cracking up. I was listening to you, Stuckey, and Brett on your podcast. And you have a infatuation for Danny Stutzman and then Stuckey if folks have listened to your podcast, he likes to, you know, poke the bear a little bit and continue to kind of carry it to the next level. So let's talk me through this Oklahoma defense. What intrigues you so much about Danny Stutzman? Why does he make this team go from a defensive standpoint? Oklahoma win total sitting at 7.5 in year 1 in the SEC.
Yeah, I think you have to do a deep dive on what Brent Venables wants in his defense. And if, you know, you're just brand new to college football, he had maybe one of the best defenses in college football history in 2018 with Clemson. And his middle linebacker all those years at Clemson's was James Skowski. Now, the reason I bring this up is because Venables is ultra dependent on a middle linebacker to relay the signals in, call an audible, but more importantly, line up his defensive line and line up his linebackers. There is no more a captain of a defense than a Brent Venables defense that needs a middle linebacker. When you get a James Skowski, who I don't think played a snap in the NFL, but he's the team captain of the defense for Clemson for 6 years, you need to pay attention when he gets that middle linebacker. Well, he has that in Danny Stutzman. Stutzman was never the highest blue chip coming out. He was never considered to be, but he has worked himself into being one of the best linebackers in the SEC, plays middle linebacker. And I think the thing that impressed me the most about Danny Stutzman last year is that this entire Sooners defense had massive problems with tackling last year. I think they missed 30 tackles in a couple games in the middle of the season. That's when Danny Stutzman was hurt. Danny Stutzman comes back. The defense is completely revamped, and it's why he got them all lined up correctly. He was able to pull in signals. He was maybe able to steal signs like Venables likes to do. But more importantly, he only missed 11 tackles on the entire season. That's how important he is to this Sooners defense. So it's not so much you look at Danny Stutzman's numbers and Stucky likes to kid me about him making the Heisman. It's what he does for everybody else and for his coach. So, you know, saying that, I think Oklahoma is completely underrated here. You look at their experience numbers, and you're not going to give them any credit for having Jackson Arnold because he didn't play last year with Dylan Gabriel there. You're going to look at a Deion Burks from Purdue and just look at his numbers and think this is just a weapon when he is an explosive target waiting to break out here. They have a very good running back with Sawchuk. The schedule is tough. It's really tough. But, this is a team that I easily made, I think, to get up to 9 wins. They're going to be able, they do have road travel with Ole Miss, Missouri, LSU. Alabama's on there in the second half of the schedule. They're going to be favored in 7 games. The toughest part of the schedule for the Sooners, you know, they're not going to be any more than a touchdown underdog. And I think that's where you can kind of make the case where the win total is the better bet, because every time they're an underdog, it's not going to be by more than 7 points, which puts them in the game. And I think the more Jackson Arnold gets experience, especially, And I know one thing from the podcast on the Big Bets on Campus, everyone's going to talk about how this offensive line has 0 returning starters. Well, Bill Badenbaugh, who is the offensive line coach at Oklahoma since I think I was born, he's considered the best offensive line coach in the nation. And if you look at that first 3-game schedule for Oklahoma, this offensive line will be experienced by the end of September. I mean, that is a cakewalk. What's it, Temple, Tulane, Houston, I think, Houston, are on there? I don't want to hear how the offensive line has no experience when you get Cupcake City to start off the first 3 games of the year. So I like over 7.5.
I'm just pulling up the game of the week 1 line, because Temple might be the worst team in the FCS or FBS this year. And, you know, probably wouldn't be very good in the FCS either. 41.5 is where we're sitting right now for week 1 in that game. I can't let you go without talking about your Hogs. Total of 4.5. I'd opened the last podcast talking about the new offensive coordinator hires, and say what you will about him from an off the field standpoint, Bobby Petrino could call some plays, man. But I don't know how that dynamic's going to work. Does he want the job? Is it going to be weird? Sam Pittman certainly entering on the hot seat. 4.5 is the win total. The floor is yours on your Hogs. What do you expect from Arkansas in a critical year for Sam Pittman?
Yeah, the win total is 4.5, and I make it directly on 4.3. I can't say heads or tails on this, but I'm getting a lot of mixed signals on this team. One is that Sam Pittman made a huge mistake hiring Dan Enos. It's going to cost him his job, and if the Razorbacks have any trouble here, say a sub-500 record, he's going to be out before that bye week getting into November. But then numerous head coaches I've talked to on the side, Bobby Petrino will win Arkansas 3 games that they weren't going to win without him. That's how good of an offensive coach he is. So when you have a head coach that potentially is going out and you have an offensive coordinator that's worth 3 wins, it really gives you a lot of mixed signals. I do love this offense of Arkansas. Talen Green was someone that was recruited by Petrino and Pittman separately years ago. They both wanted him as quarterbacks in their systems. And you look at Andrew Armstrong, he is going to be an explosive receiver this year. And by the way, no fall off with Raheem Sanders going to South Carolina. You get Jaquindon Jackson in from Utah, who has just as good with yards after contact and elusiveness. So from an offensive perspective, they're going to be okay. And Bobby Petrino is going to ring a few defensive coordinators up a flagpole with some points here and embarrass a couple teams. At the same time, I'm not sure the talent level is there to actually compete within the SEC. I do love the defense and what Travis Williams is doing. Landon Jackson, the defensive edge, is going to create a lot of havoc here. At the same time, if I had to go one way or the other, I would go over just based on Petrino alone, based on how much you look at what Talen Green did under Dirk Cotter versus under Bush Hamden at Boise State. That should tell you enough about how good this offense is going to be. To me, it also comes down to team chemistry. The defense hated each other the last 2 years. There is some off-field stuff happening with this team that nobody wants to talk about out loud. The locker room hated each other. And, you know, I've got a fresh group in there, and I've got eyes on the locker room to make sure they have good chemistry going. But if I had to take one right now, I would go over simply on the fact that Petrino has the pieces that he needs to score points.
All right. September 27th, 2025, when I'm sitting next to you and you're calling the Hogs as my Irish take the field there in Fayetteville, who's the head coach of your beloved Arkansas Razorbacks when Notre Dame comes to town in September of 25?
As much as I've wanted Gus to come back for 15 years now, I'm going to say it's Rhett Lashley of SMU. Rhett Lashley is a Fort Smith Northside kid. He came up under Gus Malzahn. He was a coach under Gus Malzahn. He's an Arkansas-born guy. And what he has done at SMU, by the way, if you're late to the party, SMU overs, SMU to contend for the ACC. I mean, SMU is a man ready to play Power Four football this year. Rhett Lashley, I think, will position himself to take a bigger Power Five job after this season here. And to me, he is young enough to work the portal. And this is a young man's game, by the way. If you're over 38 years old, you're probably not there for the NIL, for the portal. This is a young man's game as a head coach from here, from now on out, especially with the technology hitting the tablets on the sidelines. But I think Rhett Lashley is definitely number one on that list. Then I would probably go searching through some old coordinators like the old Barry Odoms, the Bobby Petrinos, things like that to see if they want to come back to Fayetteville.
People in my neck of the woods aren't going to like to hear that Barry Odom name. You know, they want to keep him around these parts. Yeah, I'm with you on SMU. I paid some heavy juice to get 7.5 over on their win total. So hopefully the Ponies could take care of business with no Clemson on the schedule, no Miami, no Virginia Tech. Very manageable. Get Florida State at home. You're down there at SEC Media Days. You've got the SEC preview coming out. We can't touch on every single team in this conference. So I'll let you kind of do dealer's choice. We have not touched on A&M, Florida, South Carolina, Kentucky, Auburn, Mississippi State, Vandy. Colin, from a bet standpoint, season win total, future, whatever it may be, is there a future or two of those kind of best of the rest that jumps out to you?
Yeah, let me spitball a couple of the ones that I like. I mean, let's talk about Vanderbilt. I mean, they have two games on the schedule that are they're going to win easily. Just no question about it. Just teams that are completely inferior that are on their schedule, they're going to get. So where do you get that third game to get over that heavy juice 2.5 or a push on 3? And oh my goodness, is Jerry Kill and Diego Pavia going to be taking on Auburn and Hugh Freeze again? Did you know Hugh Freeze has lost Jerry Kill 2 years, and not just last year, the year before also at when Hugh Freeze was with Liberty? Something about Jerry Kill has the number of Hugh Freeze. So I like Vanderbilt to at least push on their 3, potentially go over if you need some love there. You know, South Carolina, not big about what they have from a weapons department, and Sellers as a dual threat. You know, there's a lot of potential issues going on here from who his offensive coordinator is with Dowell Logans. It's just not going to be a good fit, and he is very green to lead that team. I don't think they get to 6 wins, so I definitely love the under there. If I had to go one more, oh boy.
You don't have to if you don't want to.
I mean, it's tough. It's tough. I have Florida under 4.5 at +130. And I do that begrudgingly because Graham Mertz numbers from an accuracy perspective are fantastic. They have weapons. They have a really good team. They're going to snag somebody that they're not supposed to. But when depth and schedule set in the last 5 weeks of the year, they're going to get run out of the building. I think it's, even though I don't particularly like Billy Napier and his style of running it up and killing my under in a lot of games. He likes to run tempo when he's up by 40. I don't know why. I think that he got a really raw deal with this schedule. Because it's sad because Florida has a lot of good talent on here. They're still working to get the kinks worked out on their defense. But, you know, that I took under 4.5. This schedule is unbelievable. And that last stretch of five games, I don't think they have a shot.
What do you make of the opener against Miami? Because there are some threes out there. I haven't scooped it. I'm intrigued by the Gators here because it has been an offseason, and I know I've added to the fire of like, this schedule's outrageous. They play UCF, which is not going to be easy in the non-con. You know, Sunbelt Billy, if he gets the 6 wins, should win Coach of the Year. I'm staring at that week one game, and I know we all in this betting world have our jokes about Mario Cristobal. I could convince myself at 3 to look at the Gators. What do you make that week one game?
I think it goes hand in hand with the win total. If you're going to take an under 4.5 at +130, which it is out there at plus money in the market, you're going to go back and take Florida to beat Miami, which I might do independently. Miami still finished defensively 124th in defensive finishing drives. If you can get into scoring position past the 40, you're going to get more than 3 points. You're going to get probably 4 or 5 average points up for the whole game. And Florida, in my opinion, has more talent. I think, you know, all things set aside, forget the schedule, forget everything. I even think Billy Napier is a better in-game coach than Cristobal. And that boy, is that making a statement or what? But you're definitely going to put those two together. If you're taking a Florida under at plus money, you're also going to take Florida to beat Miami, because then you've kind of offset those two bets and you can wash your hands.
Well, I'm annoyed because I just looked it up and the market has reacted. When it hit 3, that was clearly the buy point, because those threes have all been scooped up. So maybe we'll get it as we get close to kickoff. Colin, you know, I always love picking your brain, man. It was great catching up with you and Brett in Vegas. Love your work at _Colin1. Make sure you check out his SEC preview up with the Action Network. And we are all friends in this podcast world. Make sure you check out the Big Bets on Campus podcast feed. One of my favorite listens each and every week, especially during the football season. Colin, you're the man. Appreciate it. And good luck with the season bets.
Thanks for having me, Tim.
All right, we're back on the podcast. Thanks again to Colin Wilson for jumping on the pod and breaking down the SEC. A lot of insight from SEC Media Days and some best bets as well. Make sure you check out his SEC preview up on the Action Network right now. So we're going to close the podcast with two things. First, please continue to rate, review, and subscribe. Shouts to you guys. You've been great. I keep seeing each and every week another 5-star review showing up there. So thank you so much. It really means a lot. Let's keep it rolling. Heading into the season, we'll be back with our normal podcast schedule, breakdowns with Matt Eumanns, chatting with Adam Burke, recapping the weekend that was. So let's keep it rolling here. Mid-July into August, the VSiN College Football Betting Preview will be out August 1st. We're all working hard on it. I know we talk about it on a nightly basis with JVT, Adam Burke, Wes Reynolds, Matt Eumanns, Tyler Shoemaker. I'm sure I'm leaving out some folks, Steve Mackinnon as well. We're all working hard on the VSiN College Football Preview as well, which will be out soon enough. So please continue to rate, review, and subscribe. It means a ton, and it really helps out the podcast too. So let's continue to make it grow, and maybe we could show up in some of those top 200 markets even in the off season. But you guys have been absolutely awesome. Been loving hearing the feedback as well. So we got that out of the way. Thank you again. We're going to end with this. Jeff Tedford, the head coach of Florida State, has resigned. It happened earlier this week on Monday. Jeff Tedford put out a statement saying, quote, "It is with sad emotions that following my recent medical checkup, it is clear that due to health concerns, my family and I have made the decision to step aside as Fresno State's head coach and allow someone else to lead the football program. I have a tremendous amount of pride and passion for Fresno State, and I understand the time and energy coaches and Bulldog supporters deserve the best. Unfortunately, I am not able to sustain the commitment needed to perform at the level needed to guide the program. We are extremely fortunate to have continuity with a great coaching staff. I have full confidence that they will continue to guide our terrific student athletes to reach their full potential on and off the field." So pretty big news, and certainly surprising considering Coach Tedford was at Circa last week chatting with the media and going through the media days, getting ready for this upcoming season. A couple things before we get into Jeff Tedford, the coach, his impact on so many. From a betting standpoint, Jeff Tedford meant something to Fresno. And I know you might think that's simplistic, but I texted a couple folks, Jeff Benson at Circa and Johnny Avello at DraftKings, and they both moved the futures market based off of this news. This is what Jeff Benson had to say, very plain and simple. He said, he is important. And Circa, when Mountain West came to town for media days last week, they sent out an updated odds board, and Fresno State was plus 350 to win the conference at Circa. Those odds have moved. They are now 5-1 to win the conference. The two teams that moved, Boise State last week was plus 135 to win the conference at Circa. They're now minus 115. And UNLV, who in the preseason poll just edged out Fresno State for the number two spot, moved from 8-1 down to plus 650. At DraftKings, Boise, UNLV, and Fresno were all affected by this move. Fresno moved from plus 320 out to 4-1, according to Johnny Avello. Boise State moved down to even money, according to Johnny Avello as well. They were at plus 120. They went down to even money, and UNLV went from plus 650 down to plus 550. So movement in the betting market based off of the news that Jeff Tedford would and did step down as the head coach of Fresno State. And stepping in will be Tim Skipper on an interim basis. He did step in to coach the bowl game against New Mexico State just a year ago as a 3-point underdog. Fresno State obliterated New Mexico State 37-10. So Tim Skipper, 1-0 and 1-0 ATS as the head coach of Fresno State. From a schedule standpoint, they open at Michigan and they also play UNLV. UNLV will come off a bye on September 28th and they play at Air Force. Fresno State does. They do not, however, play Boise State this year. So Jeff Tedford's retirement did lead to movement in the odds market. You know, just looking at his time at Fresno State and in the 2022 season there, remember, he was the head coach of Fresno State, stepped down due to health concerns. Kalen DeBoer entered. Kalen DeBoer gets the Washington job. Jeff Tedford comes back in the first year back at his alma mater, Fresno State, 2022. Fresno starts 1-4. Jake Haner gets hurt in a game against USC. And then they rattled off 9 straight wins. So in that losing streak, when Logan Fife stepped in as the quarterback, they were a 23-point favorite on the road at UConn, and they lost to the Huskies 19-14. At 1-4, they hosted San Jose State, a pretty good San Jose State team. They were a 7-point home underdog, and they won that game 17-10, and that started to turn the tides a little bit. Haner returned for the game against San Diego State. They got rolling, and on this podcast, we bet on Jake Haner quite a bit, especially in that Mountain West Championship game where they got a rematch against Boise State. They were a 3-point dog in Boise. They went out, won that game 28-16, and then they were a 4-point favorite in the LA Bowl against Wazoo, and they absolutely smashed Washington State 29-6. And then you look back at 2018, Jeff Tedford's second year at Fresno State, and they won the conference again. Beat Boise State, avenged a loss in the regular season in 2018, and they went out and won the Las Vegas Bowl. Under Jeff Tedford, I guess he didn't coach the bowl game last year. They went 4-0 in their bowl games. They won the 2017 Hawaii Bowl, covered that one as a 6-point favorite against Arizona State, the Vegas Bowl. They won that game 31-20, and then the most recent bowls under Tedford, they won as well. So 4-0 and 4-0 ATS under Tedford. And then you think back to his days at Cal, and Cal is a program that We do not think about as a juggernaut by any stretch of the imagination, but this was a team that, you know, finished ninth in the country in 2004, helped out that they had a quarterback by the name of Aaron Rodgers and a running back by the name of Marshawn Lynch. They were co-Pac-12 champions in 2006. I mean, hell, back in 2004, they lost to USC 23-17. They were number four in the country, and I'm trying to remember if there was a bit of an uproar that they didn't go to the Rose Bowl that year. They were fourth in the country. USC went on to win the national championship. USC went undefeated in 2004. Their closest game, I believe, was against Cal, 23-17, and Tedford was the head coach of that Cal team. They had some really good teams, and they had some really good players. They finished in the top 25 three consecutive years, 04, 05, and 06. He went 82-57 at Cal, 45-22 at Fresno State, won the conference twice, went to the conference championship 3 out of 5 years, finished in the top 25 2 out of his 5 years at Fresno State. Jeff Tedford is a phenomenal coach and one of the better, you know, one of the more underrated coaches, I would say, that is out there. So wishing Coach Tedford the best, and hopefully the health does get figured out in a positive light there for Coach Tedford as he steps aside, a little surprisingly, heading into this upcoming season. We're going to end the podcast with this. So Coach Tedford was actually on VSiN Primetime just a year ago, not this most recent year, but 2 years ago when Mountain West Media Days came to town, and we got to storytelling with Jeff Tedford. You're going to hear two clips here. I'll lead into both of them. The first one is about finding Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers played two seasons at Cal, 2003 and 2004, and the irony of Aaron Rodgers coming to Cal was that when Jeff Tedford was out on the recruiting trail, he was not necessarily searching for Aaron Rodgers.
You knew it, right? When you went to that JUCO to go get Aaron Rodgers, you said, that guy right there, I'm telling you, is going to win 4 MVPs and is going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
And a
right?
Super Bowl.
And a Super Bowl. You knew it all along, right, Coach? You were the genius that saw the forget the Packers drafting him, you know, when they drafted him. It was you. Yeah. It all started with you.
Absolutely. No, that's a funny story because I was actually watching a tight end. I was looking at the tight end on tape, and I'm kind of watching the quarterback run. I'm like, who's a quarterback, you know? And he'd only played 1 year in junior college, but he was a qualifier, so he was able to come out. We had a bye that next week. I drove to Chico to watch Butte practice. It was so evident, besides Aaron's physical skills, just the way he led the whole thing. I'm on the sideline talking to the coach, and he's running the whole practice. And so he's a pretty special guy. And obviously when he came, I talked to him on the way home that day, recruited him, he came. The rest is history. He did a great job for us and one of the best that ever played the game.
So Aaron Rodgers there for two seasons, and there was a slight overlap between Aaron Rodgers and Marshawn Lynch. Marshawn Lynch was 2004 to 2006 at Cal. He had a solid freshman year, 8 touchdowns on the ground, 628 yards, but his big years were in 05 and 06. He rushed for over 1,300 yards in 2006. And Jeff Tedford, when I asked him about Marshawn Lynch, boy, he lit up. He thinks the world of Marshawn Lynch. And these were his thoughts on what was a unique character back then and still is today, Marshawn Lynch.
I'm just thinking back to the 04 Cal team.
They were good.
What kind of discussions were going on in that locker room? Because, you know, we've gotten to see now this unique personality that Marshawn Lynch has become, right? He's this revelation. What was he like as a young, you know, teenager, early 20s? I mean, Aaron Rodgers, Marshawn Lynch together in a locker room. Two of the most unique personalities now, you know, in the world of football.
Yeah, I knew Marshawn back when we recruited him in high school. He had a fro and these black corner room glasses with electrical tape holding them together, right? And so, but when he got to Cal, there's not a better teammate than Marshawn Lynch. The dude has a heart
as big as you could imagine, right? And his teammates loved him. And just a freak on the field, for sure. I mean, the guy could do some special things. And so I'm really happy for his success, not just on the field, but what he's done, the brand he's created for himself. Pretty special. You know, it's when you look at Marshawn, he takes a lot of pride in his hometown and being from Oakland. He never wanted to be separated from that. He didn't want to be the guy that came to Cal and be this educated guy that separated himself from Oakland, or go to the NFL and be this guy that didn't appreciate where his roots were, you know, and he continues to be that to this day. You know, I give him a lot of credit for being the guy who is and standing strong with his beliefs and where he's from.
Yeah, Marshawn lives here in Las Vegas. The big question, what was the punishment when he commandeered the golf cart and was riding around the field, you know, making people scramble at a frenetic pace?
We only got a minute, Coach, because I had this written down, too. It was after an overtime win against Washington. Is that right?
Yeah, overtime win. We ran a sweep to the left at a 3-by-1. He scored. And I'm going over shaking the hands, and all of a sudden I see him rolling around in a golf cart. I thought it was pretty funny. I'm like, until the AD called me the next day and ripped my butt about it, like we had planned it, right? Like, don't let him do that. Like, okay, so Marshawn, just don't do that anymore, right?
Wishing Coach the best as he has to step aside for health reasons heading into the 2024 season. Something to keep an eye on, and Jonathan Von Tobel mentioned this on Follow the Money earlier this week. The portal is now open for Fresno State. It's late in the process, but I am curious, and I haven't heard anything. This is speculatory. But Mikey Keene, quarterback of Fresno State, selected first team All Mountain West by the media at Mountain West Media Days. He can transfer right now because of Jeff Tedford stepping aside. For Fresno State's sake, I hope he sticks around, but it's going to be interesting to see if anyone comes a calling to Mikey Keene as he heads into this upcoming season. Once again, Tim Skipper steps in on an interim basis there for Fresno State. All right, that's going to do it for the podcast. Thanks to all of you for listening. Please rate, review, and subscribe, as I say, each and every week. And you guys have been awesome, and I really do appreciate it. We're going to be breaking down another conference with the creator of the Pick Six Previews magazine, Brett Cianca, later on, actually early next week. And also hoping to catch up again with Phil Steele later on in the process as well. Thanks to Colin Wilson for jumping on the podcast, breaking down the SEC. Thanks to Steven, our producer. I am Tim Murray. Give me a follow on Twitter at @1TimMurray. We'll be back next week right here on the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast.